Good morning. For those of you that are guests with us today, this may be your first time here. I just want to introduce myself to you. My name is David Joseph. I'm one of the pastors here at Indian Rocks. Pastor Jeff, who is our lead pastor, is on vacation. So you can be praying for him and his family as they just have some well-deserved rest. But I have the privilege to share this weekend. And so, you know, as we, I hope you had a great fourth last night. I had a great fourth. After the service last night, it's amazing. I went to my son's house, and he has two little ones, two preschoolers, one Gabe that's 5 years old and little Isla, 3 and a half, and they wanted to make sure that they got to bed early because they had church today. So my son bought this, you know, $9-$10 package of fireworks at the grocery store, and these kids were just like in awe, you know. And in daylight, we sat there on their driveway, and we let off fireworks in the daytime, you know, because it was still about 8 o'clock. But I tell you what, I enjoyed that more than if I was down fighting the crowds and watching fireworks. Anybody do that last night? Fight the crowds? And okay, good for you. All right. But I hope you had a great fourth, and we celebrate our independence this weekend. And I don't know if you're like me, but as we celebrate this, for me, the celebration is somewhat tainted based on some of the recent events over the last 10 days. And I'm not going to get into a lot of that today, but there's been a lot of great speeches made and things like that. But, you know, we're celebrating our freedom as a nation, but it really is a far cry from the freedom that was the foundation that this country was built upon. And I'd hazard a guess that our founding fathers wouldn't even believe what we call freedom today. And 5 years ago, the 4th of July was on a Sunday. And I had the privilege 5 years ago to share the weekend sermon. And so what I did was I wanted to make sure that I didn't repeat myself. So I went back and I looked at that message. And as I looked at that message, there was so much of that message that bared to be repeated, especially in the wake of things that we've seen happen recently. So I am going to share some of those parts of the message from 5 years ago. So you're not getting a true repeat, but there's just some things that bear to be repeated as we celebrate our independence as a nation. And I think it bears to be repeated because, number one, it's a great reminder to look back at our foundational heritage as we celebrate this freedom that we have. And in the last 5 years, the second reason is that it seems as our country has drifted even further from its foundational heritage and has embraced a false freedom with even more passion. So I'm going to share some of, again, what I shared 5 years ago. And we're going to look at the story of the prodigal in Scripture. And it's one of my favorite stories. I love that story, and I use applications from that story often. But the parable is found in Luke 15, verses 11 to 32. But instead of reading it this morning, I want you to be able to enjoy seeing this story played out in a little bit different way than you would anticipate. So let's go ahead and take your attention to the screens.
You ever get tired of your day-to-day average existence? I know I do. Or at least I should say that I did. And then I decided to do something about it. You see, conventional wisdom says that you live your life, and when your parents die, they give you what they have left over, an inheritance, right? Sorry, that was not good enough for me. So I decided to do something about it. So I walked straight up to my dad, looked him square in the eye, and I said,
"Dad, I want what's coming to me right now. My son is looking at me demanding what he thinks he deserves. And all I could be thinking was I'd like to give him what he deserves. I brought him into this world, and I can take him out, and I can make another one just like him. But he's my son, and I love him, and he wanted his money, so I gave it to him. And the next thing I knew,
I was out of there. Kissed this boring place goodbye. I had places to go and people to see. So the first thing I did was,
he got lost. My son, he's no Magellan. I heard he got lost at least 4 times before he made it over hometown.
It wasn't 4 times, okay? It was 3. And besides, 1 doesn't count because I'm asking this guy for directions, right? And he's all trying to tell me I can't understand a thing he's saying, and I'm like, okay, okay. And then the other two, well, you know what? The only reason I can't follow directions is because somebody never taught me.
Is that what he said, that I never taught him? No, I taught him. He just never listened.
Listen, it doesn't matter. The point was, I got out of there, and I began to live it up. Oh, I'm telling you, I had the friends, the money, the clothes, the food, and the ladies. What can I say about the ladies?
I can say something about the ladies. They weren't ladies. They may have been women, but they were not ladies.
Okay, never mind. It doesn't matter about the ladies, okay? The point is, I had the friends, the clothes, the food. I was living it up until...
Till a recession hit our country and he ran out of money.
It was bad. I didn't have anything. I tried to find a job, but there was nothing. And I looked and looked, and finally I found this job. And it wasn't bad. It was a managerial position. It was an assistant manager. It was an associate. Okay. I was a bacon preparation assistant.
Which means?
I sloughed hogs. It was bad. I had wasted everything that I had. I didn't have a place to live. I didn't have anything to eat. Every day I'd be feeding the pigs, and I would look at the stuff that I was feeding them, and I gladly would have eaten it, but I couldn't. They wouldn't let me. And so I lived in agony, realizing that I'd squandered my life, and I just lived painfully day after day after day.
We'll see the rest of that story towards the end of the message this morning. But you know, as we celebrate the 4th this weekend, I couldn't help myself to be drawn to this story. Here we have a young man who wanted his freedom. And so one day he declared his freedom, yet he found that that freedom wasn't all that it was cracked up to be. And as we examine this story, it reveals the heart of the dilemma that we find many individuals in most of our nation today. We have abandoned a real freedom for a fake freedom. Let's call it a prodigal freedom. When the son left from under the father's authority, he also left from under the father's guidance, his protection, and which were all expressions of the father's love and his blessings. And when our nation left God and godly paths and principles and wrote and legislated God out of our existence, we left real freedom and gained a prodigal freedom. We're giving up on true freedom for a fake. But although our world today really doesn't have a problem or issues with the artificial, you know, we have phony everything. We have knockoffs. We have imitations galore. But phony has very little value. It has very little substance, and it has very little worth. And in this story, Jesus tells us a great deal about freedom and how to know if you are living lives that have found true freedom or only a prodigal freedom. And the lessons to be learned are for us as individuals and for a nation. So as I share today, I'm going to make some applications that are going to be hopefully personal for you to look in the mirror, but also some applications as we take a look at our country. And as we celebrate our independence as a country, I think that it's a great time to look back and to evaluate the freedom our forefathers sought versus the freedom that we're experiencing as a nation today. So we're going to take a look back a couple of times during the message this morning. And the first thing that I want us to look at is just a portion of our Declaration of Independence.
When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with one another, and to assume the powers of the earth, the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
See, our framers of our Constitution knew and recognized what freedom was all about. Real freedom is an endowment from God and no one else. True freedom comes from God and God alone. And the story of the prodigal, it teaches us there's a fatal flaw to this freedom that we must watch out for and be very mindful of. Because just like fake sugar, fake butter, fake milk, fake hair, there's also fake freedom. And herein lies the dilemma. We have this natural desire within all of us for independence. That natural man that wants to be the boss. And from childhood through adolescence, teen years to young adult, we have our heart set towards freedom and independence. And we resist anyone or anything that tries to control us. And that's our sinful nature, the natural man. But we were created by God to live in a relationship with Him. We were made for that relationship. And He is the Creator, and we're the created. We're the creatures. Romans chapter 1, verses 18 to 32 gives us a perfect picture of this sinful desire. I'm only going to read a portion of that, but I really encourage you later today to read Romans 1, 18 to 32. But I'm going to pick it up in verse 20. And it says this: "For His invisible attributes, namely His eternal power and divine nature, have clearly been perceived, even since from the creation of the world and the things that have been made. So they are without excuse." We're without excuse. "For although they knew God, they did not honor Him as God or give thanks to Him, but they became futile in their thinking and foolish in their hearts, and they were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. Therefore, God gave them up in the lust of their hearts to impurity, to dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and served the creature, ourselves, rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. So for this reason, God gave them up to dishonorable passions. For their women exchanged natural relations for those that are contrary to nature. And the men likewise gave up natural relations with women and were consumed with passion for one another. Men committing shameless acts with men and receiving in themselves the due penalty of their error. And since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a debased mind to do the things that ought not to be done." And this is a picture of what's happening, I believe, in our country today. Just a couple of those phrases in that text. In verse 22, "claiming to be wise, they became fools." Verse 23, "because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie, and they worshiped and served the creature rather than the Creator." And then in verses 24, 26, and 28, you saw that phrase where God gave them up. God gave them up. And I think it's a perfect picture of what happened with the prodigal. And sadly, it's a perfect picture of what's happening to our country today. And there's really three lessons that I want us to learn from this story of the prodigal. So there's three points to my outline this morning. And point number one is this: to the prodigal, it was freedom to be on his own. Again, I just want us to look back. I want us to look back right now at part of Lincoln's Gettysburg Address.
"It is for us the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth."
Did you catch what Lincoln said there? One of the things that he said was, this nation under God. You know, the founders and the early leaders of this country, with all their heart, believe that in order for this country to last, in order for America to stand the test of time, in order for America to preserve freedom, she must be governed and conduct her affairs under God. And as we look at so many of the historical documents of our nation, we see a consistent and constant acknowledgement and recognition of God and our dependence on Him as a people and as a nation. Well, in the story of the prodigal, you see in chapter 15 of Luke, verse 13, it says, "Not many days later, the younger son, he gathered all he had and took a journey into a far country." You know, the prodigal son, he wanted his freedom more than anything else. He's no different than us in here this morning. We want to be free. We want our country to be free. We want freedom. The question is, freedom from what? What do we really want? You know, the prodigal thought freedom meant getting away from authority, the responsibilities, and the limits of his father's house. He got the blessings of being a son, and as soon as he did, he took off for someplace far, far away from his father's home, his father's boundaries, and his father's rules. But all of these were expressions of the father's love. But as he left the father's home, his boundaries, and his rules, he failed to realize that it also meant that he would be leaving the father's provision, protection, and security. So the father gave him up. The father gave him up. Just like the prodigal, though, I believe that far too many Americans have been convinced that freedom means being on your own, free of boundaries, free of rules, free of responsibilities. I came across a quote about a compass. And for those that aren't familiar with how to use a compass, think of the GPS, okay, on your smartphone. But here's the quote about a compass. "A man who is enslaved to his compass is free to go wherever he wants. But a man who refuses to be enslaved to his compass must stay close to the shore." So what does free mean to you? Does it mean free to do as you please or free to do as God pleases? Does it mean free to live by your standards or does it mean to be free to live by God's standards? Does it mean to live and to be free to live to carry out your pleasures, or does it mean you're free to live according to and to fulfill God's pleasures? You know, sometime between 1776 and the turn of this century, America redefined and reinterpreted freedom under God to mean freedom from God. Back when on April the 13th, 2004, during one of his press conferences, President Bush stated this, "I also have this belief, this strong belief, that freedom is not this country's gift to the world. Freedom is the Almighty's gift to every man and woman in this world." And believe it or not, that comment, that statement just created a firestorm of critics who were just deriding President Bush for using God in his speeches. And as I came across a proclamation of Abraham Lincoln, I just wondered how our culture, our society, our media today would respond to something that Abraham Lincoln shared with his country during a proclamation calling the country to a national day of prayer and fasting. Listen to this. I don't think a pastor could be more eloquent than this president.
"It is the duty of nations, as well as of men, to own their dependence upon the overruling power of God, and to confess their sins and transgressions in humble sorrow, yet with assured hope that genuine repentance will lead to mercy and pardon, and to recognize the sublime truth announced in Holy Scripture and proven by all history, that those nations only are blessed whose God is the Lord. And insomuch as we know that by His divine law, nations like individuals are subjected to punishments and chastisements in this world, May we not justly fear that the awful calamity of civil war, which now desolates the land, may be but a punishment inflicted upon us for our presumptuous sins, to the needful end of our national reformation as a whole people. We have been the recipients of the choicest bounties of heaven. We have been preserved these many years in peace and prosperity. We have grown in numbers, wealth, and power as no other nation has ever grown. But we have forgotten God. We have forgotten the gracious hand which has preserved us in peace and multiplied and enriched and strengthened us. And we have vainly imagined in the deceitfulness of our hearts that all these blessings were produced by some superior wisdom and virtue of our own. Intoxicated with unbroken success, we have become too self-sufficient to feel the necessity of redeeming and preserving grace, too proud to pray to the God that made us. It behooves us then to humble ourselves before the offended power, to confess our national sin, and to pray for clemency and forgiveness.
That's a message we need to hear today, isn't it? You know, in 1863, those words inspired a nation to repentance and humility. How do you think that they would be received today? You know, the prodigal. Many Americans today, just like the prodigal, think that freedom under God really means freedom from God. And that's not real freedom at all. And it brings me to my second point. To the prodigal, it was fashionable to live as he pleased. To the prodigal, it was fashionable to live as he pleased. When it comes to fashion, your mind first goes to, more times than not, clothing. And are you amazed as I am about how quickly these fashions just change? I was talking to Pastor Jim this past week, and we were talking, and I said, you know what we need to do? I said, you and I need to buy some of these skinny jeans. And then we thought about it for a little bit, and we both determined that our bodies and our age wouldn't fit skinny jeans, you know. But it's amazing how fashions sweep the nation sometimes. But, you know, today in America, it is fashionable to rewrite history to suit our desires. In America, it's fashionable to give new meaning to our Constitution beyond the originator's spirit and intent. In America, it is fashionable to redefine what God has clearly defined. And as you look back, again, I just want us to take a look at our First Amendment to the Constitution, which was adopted in December the 15th, 1791.
Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances.
Now, nowhere in this amendment or in any other portion of our Constitution do we ever see mentioned the separation of church and state. It was never the intent of our founding fathers to keep the church or to keep God out of government, but rather to keep the government out of the church. But yet, today in America, it is fashionable to bully God out of existence. In America, it's fashionable to be promiscuous. It's fashionable for couples to live together. It's fashionable to be homosexual. It's fashionable to change your gender. It's fashionable to accept or to kill. It's fashionable and acceptable to kill unborn children. And listen to this. It is fashionable to label as homophobic, bigoted, hate-mongering, self-righteous, narrow-minded anyone who shows the slightest inkling of character or morality. You know, I believe that our church is not this church, but this church, the church in across the world, is watching our nation slide headlong into the pig pen of moral relativism, where the only truth embraced is that there's no absolute truth. I believe the church has become frozen because of the overwhelming degree of this cultural shift. We have become complacent, even ignorant of how to stem this tide. And this hands-off approach to the decay of morality and truth jeopardizes our real freedom every day we apathetically sit by. In the last presidential election, It's estimated that of the 80 to 90 evangelical Christians, only about 32 million of them voted. Less than half. In the early 1900s, there was a theologian by the name of Francis Schaeffer, and he said this: "Here is the great evangelical disaster, the failure of the evangelical world to stand for truth as truth. There is no word for this. There is only one word for this, namely accommodation." You know, freedom from God may sound appealing to the masses, but the ultimate outcome is devastating. You know, in the 1960s, there was a kind of a cultural shift in America. The rules began to be challenged. People felt that where there were rules, there was no freedom. Freedom meant really no rules, no laws, no morals, no standards, just freedom. And this led to free love, to free sex, to free everything. And we had that mantra, if it feels good, do it. It became the slogan of that day, and everyone did as they thought was right. It is said that you can tell when a moral or cultural shift has taken place by three signs. The first one is this: what was condemned is now celebrated. The second, what was celebrated is now condemned. And the third is those who refuse to celebrate are now condemned. And I think that we're seeing this played out in our nation today. In Proverbs 16:25, it gives us a stern warning. There is a way which seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. So here again is this fatal flaw that we have. And parents, we've seen this, you know, happen. I did it with my parents and my kids with me. And it's just something that we see through the years with our children's kids wanting to grow up. Teens wanting their freedom. Freedom to do as they please. But that's not freedom. That's immaturity. It's just immaturity. And we hear it in so many different attempts to get their freedom. And I remember saying it, you know, don't you trust me? You know, all my friends are doing whatever. And you really go for the heart here when you say, if you love me, you'll let me do this. Or if you love me, you'll let me go here. And my response was always, I love you too much to let you go. Teenagers, you may not want to hear this, but for the most part, your parents know what's best for you. I know that you may not believe that, but they do. And the guidelines they've set before you are expressions of their love. True freedom is not doing as you please. That is prodigal freedom, and it will lead you right into the pig pen. And so, parents, I just want to encourage you to keep fighting the fight. You know, even when it's tough in the home, keep fighting the fight because our kids are worth it. Our kids are worth it. And if you ever have the chance, parents of teens, and I know there's more of you in here than there are in our other services. Our Gen team here, led by our children, middle school, high school pastors, every once in a while look in the heartbeat for it. There, you know, Pastor JJ will do a workshop called Elephant in the Room. And it helps parents understand the culture that your kids are living in. And sometimes we have blinders and we just don't even realize it. But you have a tremendous job out there and a responsibility. And we want to help equip you to be the parents that anything that we can help you do to come alongside of you as you have the responsibility to raise your children and godly principles. And so I just want to encourage you. And for those of the kids in here that are getting the elbows right now from the parents, they love you. You know, those rules are expressions of their love. Well, you know, as we're celebrating our country's independence this week, and my prayer is that our country will come to that point in its life as the prodigal came to his. Because before it was too late, the Bible tells us that he came to his senses. And as we're celebrating our country's independence this weekend, my prayer, our prayer should be that our country will be as fortunate. Coming to his senses and returning home brings us to the last point that I want to share with you this morning. To the prodigal, it was futile to be anywhere but home. Luke 15, 17 to 18 says this, "But when he came to himself," or when he came to his senses, "he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, but I perish here with hunger? I will arise and go to my father and will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you.'" So he came to himself. He came to his senses. He realized that real freedom was not going to be found in a pig pen. Real freedom was going to be at home with a loving provider and protector. Real freedom was to be with the Father. You know, as a country, we are so far from home right now. And I know it breaks your heart as it breaks mine. We're in the pig pen, and we've been there for a while. And again, to realize how far we have come from where our founding fathers were, all we have to do is to reflect on some of those words. And I'm glad that there's some students in here this morning, because you're going to hear a quote from Patrick Henry right now that you probably won't hear in your textbooks, it's in your public schools. You'll hear the quote, "Give me liberty or give me death." But I doubt that you'll hear this quote.
It cannot be emphasized too strongly or too often that this great nation was founded not by religionists, but by Christians, not on religions, but on the gospel of Jesus Christ. For this very reason, peoples of other faith have been afforded asylum, prosperity, and the freedom of worship here.
See, he understood how a country was to experience true freedom, to have that freedom founded on a faith in Jesus Christ, one nation under God. He knew what was important. Look at this last written document that has been found about him in his last will and testimony.
"This is all the inheritance I give to my dear family. The religion of Christ will give them one which will make them rich indeed."
So what do we do? What do we do? Let's look back at our founding fathers one time as they wrote this Declaration of Independence. And what did our founding fathers decide that they needed to do? Listen to what our Declaration of Independence says.
"We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That when any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government."
For them, a revolt was in order. They did not throw in the towel. True freedom for them was too precious for them to sit idly by. You know, for our country's sake, I do believe that we need to fight for freedom, true freedom, freedom under God. But this fight will not be fought or won with guns or cannons or tanks or any other human weapons of war. This fight will not be won by rhetoric, arrogance, condemnation, a judgmental spirit, contempt, or hate. We're even past looking for a political answer. This is a spiritual battle. It's a battle for the soul of our nation, and we're deep in the pig pen. And the Apostle Paul in the New Testament in Ephesians lets us know that we are in a spiritual battle. He says in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12, he identifies the enemy. He says, "For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against spiritual forces of evil in heavenly places." So he identifies the enemy. That text is a great text if you read on, because then he tells you the equipment that you have and the full armor of God. Then after that, he tells you about the energy that we have that can be tapped into through prayer. It's a great outline to understand that our battle is not against flesh and blood. It's not against people who have a different viewpoint. Christ says we're to love our neighbors. You know, we're to love our enemy. Our battle is a spiritual one at this point. And long ago, God gave us the formula to bring national healing. We have a responsibility in this fight. And of course, we're familiar with this passage in 2 Chronicles 7:14, where it says, if my people, he's talking about us, we'll make it the church today. If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and I will heal their land. You know, the wonderful part of the prodigal story was the father's heart, always loving, always ready to forgive and to restore true freedom. Let's look at the rest of this story right now.
Day after day, I'd watch and I'd wait for him, and my heart would only ache as a father can for his child. But hear me on this. I never gave up on him. I knew that he would come back one day.
One day it hit me. I realized that my father's lowliest worker lived like a king compared to me. I mean, at least they had a roof over their head and food to eat. So I wondered,
what if he doesn't come back? What if he doesn't come to his senses? What if I never see him again?
Again and again, I ran these thoughts through my head. As I began my journey back home, I knew what I would do. I couldn't ask my dad to take me back as his son, but I would just go to him and say, look, I don't want a handout, but would you take me back as a worker? Because maybe he would take me back as a worker, just maybe.
Maybe today would be the day that I would see him. That's the thing that I would say every morning when I'd wake up. Maybe today would be the day that I'd wake up and I'd look out my window and I'd see my child making his journey back home.
Home. Oh, that word means so much to me now. It means comfort and caring and understanding and acceptance and love. And I could not believe I was just a few hundred yards away from it.
It was a beautiful day. I was sitting on my front porch, and that's when I saw him.
He looked in my direction. He squinted his eyes and he stood up. I knew that he knew it was me. And then I began to wonder, what is going to happen? I mean, what if he doesn't take me back? What if he just looks me in the face and says, I told you so.
I told you so. Some of you would not believe me when I would mention my son's name. Some of you would roll your eyes that he would ever come back. But I knew he would come back. I just knew it.
I knew this was a bad idea. Each step I took closer to the house, I knew I'd made the wrong decision. And so I just stopped.
He just stood there.
I couldn't move.
Well, I couldn't just stand there, so he
jumped. My father literally jumped off of the porch. I'd never seen him do anything like that before. It was like he was this little kid who was just excited about something. And then it hit me. He was excited about me. So you know what I did?
You know what I did next?
I ran.
My heart was pounding so fast, I just had to get to him.
He was running at me with his arms stretched out wide as if to say, welcome home, welcome home.
Those were the first words that I wanted to hear. I wanted him to know that he was loved as only a father could love a child. I wanted to scoop him up in my arms when he was like a little boy and he would know that he was safe. He'd know that everything would be okay. And as I got closer to him, I could see tears running down his face.
The father was crying.
Tears of joy. You know what my son did? He jumped.
I did. I literally jumped into his arms. I was so nervous, so scared, so I jumped. And you know what my father did?
I caught him. And then
he held me. He held me like only a father can. I'm so sorry. I just kept saying it over and over again. I'm so sorry. Please. Please have mercy on me. Please forgive me. I'm sorry. I don't deserve to be called your son.
My son is home. Get him some shoes. Get him some clothes for him. Get him some new clothes. We're going to have a meal. No, we're going to have a celebration. For my son is no longer an orphan. For all my hopes have come true.
I guess it was hope.
hope that my father would have mercy on me, that he would take me back. I hope that some way I could be forgiven.
Forgiven. It's all forgiven. I will never bring it up again. There is no shame. There is no guilt. There is no bitterness. And all that is left is pure joy. For my child was lost, and now he's found.
Love that story. Just want to make a couple of applications as we close today. First of all, just a personal application. For you that are believers here today, if you're in the pig pen right now, the Father's looking down the road, ready to forgive, ready to receive you back so that you can experience the true freedom that He wants you to live in. He loves you, and all will be forgiven. There will be no shame. He's waiting for you to come home. Now for a national application. I do believe that God is still waiting for our country to come home. And the Father has given us as believers a formula to bring America back home. To humble ourselves. Understand who we are and who God is. To have an awe for God. A healthy fear of God. To humble ourselves. To pray. As Paul says, to pray without ceasing for our country. To seek His face. Seek His face. And then to turn from our own sin. To turn from our own sin. You know, it was shared with me just recently that you need to ask yourself two questions when applying Scripture. Two questions need to be asked as you try to apply Scripture to your life. It's how and when. So to apply 2 Chronicles 7:14, we see how. We need to humble ourselves, to pray, to seek His face, and to turn from our own sin. That's the how. Bigger question is the when. When are we as a church, as we as Christendom, as we as individuals, we have to look in the mirror and ask ourselves, when are we going to start humbling ourselves, praying for our nation, seeking His face, and turning from our own sin? Just a few weeks ago, I was reading a devotional that I'm going through right now, and it said this, and I think it's so appropriate. When is the best time to plant a tree? 20 years ago. When's the second best time? Now. I wish there was things we as Christians would have done 20 years ago. But the second best time to do what we know that we need to do is now. Is now. The last application I just want to make is, maybe you're in here this morning and you're a seeker. Maybe you have never understood what true freedom, the freedom that only can come through the cross of Christ, is all about. You know, Jesus said in John, "You will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. And if the Son makes you free, you shall be free indeed." So I want to encourage you this morning, if you're struggling, and if you've never really experienced the true freedom, a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ, to have a personal relationship with the Lord, then we're going to give you an opportunity to meet with one of our pastors at the end of the service. A pastor will be down front, and you can talk to him about that. But church, as a church, as believers, we know how. We just have to answer the question, when. Just have to answer the question, when. Right now I'm going to ask Pastor Tim if he'll come up and if he'll kind of close us in our service today. And I'm going to go ahead on in the back. And if you're a guest for the first time, I'd love the opportunity to meet you. But Tim, would you close us out today?
Pastor David, appreciate that so much.